Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're talking about the fruits of a remarkable partnership between institutional investors, development banks and wealth managers in pursuit of sustainable and inclusive growth. We focus on the creation of new indices that aim to create reliable benchmarks that can measure the creation of long-term value. Our panel will discuss why the latest developments promise to deliver truly win-win scenarios in this space. We'll also hear from a panel discussion on the theme, which took place at the World Bank headquarters earlier this week. Now, we know from looking at sustainable investing themes previously on the programme that partnerships are absolutely critical. So our panel will remind us how those collaborations work. We'll also ask them to explain, well, why indices matter, and we'll explore how they help to build client portfolios that really deliver in terms of sustainability objectives. Let's start with Mark Haefeli, Global Chief Investment Officer of UBS Wealth Management. Mark, perhaps you can start by giving us some context. Why is this all front and center right now?
This is a variety of forces coming together. One of the things that we've seen on our private client side is a demand for more ways and more liquid ways, more standardized ways of accessing sustainable investments. Also, the World Bank and other development banks would like to tap into the tremendous amount of wealth on the private client side to fund some of their initiatives. And what we've tried to do in partnering with Solactive at UBS is to create some of that standardization, create some indices so that we can connect both these investors and those institutions that want to put their capital to work in a sustainable way.
Simon Smiles is UBS CIO for ultra high net worth. Simon, around this question of why this matters, can you tell us a bit about, and this may seem an obvious question, why do indices, like these bond indices we're going to be talking about, why do they matter?
A lot of money follows mainstream asset allocation, which involves taking benchmark indices and optimizing expected returns, typically over a 5 to 7 year period for your core strategic asset allocation, and then taking tactical deviations around that core asset allocation. But again, you need the benchmark in the first place to come up with the mix of assets that go into your cross-asset portfolio.
And we'll come on to what is being delivered to provide those benchmarks later in the program. Next up, though, let's cross to Washington, D.C. and hear from a panel discussion and launch at the World Bank headquarters, which took place under the title Market Forces at Work, Institutional Investors and a Sustainable World. Jim Yong Kim, president of the World Bank Group, sets the scene for us.
We've been trying to understand how organizations like the World Bank Group fit in a world where aspirations are so high. As more and more people get access to the internet, they can see how everyone else lives, and aspirations are going up. Now, the Sustainable Development Goals, the entire world signed on to the Sustainable Development Goals, an ambitious agenda. The more I travel the world, the more I see that literally everybody on Earth is going to want all those things that are enshrined in the Sustainable Development Goals. And the price tag per year between now and 2030 to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals is $4 trillion. All of official development assistance is about $140 billion. And if you also look back and ask the question, so what percentage of all the capital flows into the developing world, into developing economies, are made up of official development assistance? In the 1960s, it was about 70%. And as recently as 1990, 50% or so of all the capital flows into developing countries were in the form of ODA, official development assistance. Last year was 8%, and will likely go down. And so we asked ourselves the question at the World Bank, well, we did about $60 billion business last year, and yet it's a drop in the bucket compared to what's needed. And so what do we need to do? And what we are hearing from our clients is that we need to do everything we can to maximize their finance for development. And of course, that means without question that we have to tap into private sector resources. We had to find win-win solutions where, for example, we could use our loan money to help reform sectors that could then attract private sector financing. We did this with great results in Jordan and Egypt, and we're able to help Turkey transform its health sector. And so we have to now think of organizations like the World Bank as facilitators. There's no way that ODA itself will get us anywhere close to achieving the SDGs, and so we've got to find a way of attracting that capital.
We've heard already some ambitious narratives about nothing less than wholly transforming capital markets. Indeed, the scale of both the challenge and the opportunity is not a... Indeed, the scale of both the challenge but the opportunity too here is not a new theme for this programme at least. Also on the panel at the World Bank HQ was UBS's chairman, Axel Weber, and he was asked about exactly that point.
We are, at UBS, the largest global private wealth manager, above $1 trillion of assets under management. We can bring a different set of investors to all of the sustainable investment plates, and that is private citizens. Lady Rothschild already alluded to the millennials. A third of the people that have wealth with us are increasingly those millennials, and they have totally different investment philosophies. We have been having a very good, elaborate partnership with the World Bank. Today, we're launching a new phase in that collaboration. And it's all about one very important thing, that is mainstreaming niche investments to become really part of a global investment universe. Unlike institutional investors, we have to provide composite portfolios, that is diversified portfolios across asset classes, to our private citizens, because they cannot afford to have assets in just one pocket like fixed income or equity. They have to have a diversified portfolio. So it's about bringing equity, fixed income investments to private citizens' investments. And of course, we all know once you touch retail rather than institutional business, there's a whole set of different demands on the risk-bearing capacity for those clients. So it's all about mainstreaming sustainable investments. And for that, you need to develop, as Lady Lynn said, deep financial markets. And that starts with something that we announced today. You need to have an index that basically defines what is sustainable investment. And as soon as you work with some of the benchmark providers, like what we're announcing today is basically a collaboration between World Bank, us, and other institutions, and Solactive, which is creating new financial benchmarks for World Bank and development banks' debt instruments. As soon as you have an index, you will get index funds and passive investors to be able to invest in that. As soon as you have an index and an asset class, you can develop derivative markets. So whilst capital markets are important, it's very important for financial investors, both private and institutional, to be able to hedge portfolios. So on top of capital markets, you need the derivative markets to come in. You need deeper markets. You need more liquid markets. And when you look at our clients, private wealth globally amounts to $280 trillion. Jim talked already about the need for an upper single digit. And I think that the $8 trillion we sometimes hear is a low number by comparison if you want to achieve all the targets. $280 trillion of private investments out there. If each private fund puts 1% more of private wealth into sustainable investment, you will more than triple the amount of investments that go into such portfolios. So what I've been selling, and I met Cristina Figueres, who ran the UN COP21 portfolio. That organization sits in my native Bonn. I'm German. So I saw her a couple of times, and I said, our private clients who solve generational investment issues, not just 7 years or longer, there's generational wealth management. They're probably your best friends in developing this agenda. And it's all about mainstreaming finance and using finance to do good. And, you know, who then financial institutions do have the expertise? We've been 10 years ago in the headlines when finance took a wrong turn. It is time for us to contribute in a good way to developing global investments in sustainable investments and turning the world and achieving some of these Millennium Development Goals. And I think we at UBS have put that on top of our priority list on how we develop investments. And it really, we do it because it resonates with our clients. It is not something that we do because there is a business case, but it's something where there is a business case on top of doing the right thing.
Axel Weber. Part of the week's developments was the announcement of the fruits of UBS's work with the World Bank, with other institutions, and with the index provider Solactive to create an index to deliver real benchmarks to facilitate progress. Perhaps we can come back to you here then, Mark Haefeli, for some more detail on the importance, I guess, of all this. Given all we've heard already, is it almost a foolish question to ask, why do indices matter so much?
It's not a foolish question at all. I think that the good thing about indices is they help asset allocators and others to get exposure to the space in a defined way without taking tracking error as active portfolio managers. And so that kind of standardization means that more capital can flow in a transparent way. It adds to the liquidity and deepens the market. And then as a follow-on, and I think one of the things the chairman is very focused on, is can you then get derivatives on top of that once you have the benchmarks, which would further deepen, strengthen these markets.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the mechanics of this. How do these indices help to build client portfolios? So, Simon Smiles, what about the mechanics here? How are these indices used to develop client portfolios? And what do all the new developments we've been hearing about mean for this area in terms of progress going forward?
Today, a standard fixed income, a high-grade benchmark index, has in the order of 2% allocation to multilateral development bank and development finance institutions, so very small allocation. If an asset allocator or indeed a fixed income manager wants to allocate more to the multilateral development bank space, they're actively taking tracking error. So they're moving off benchmark, and they've only got a limited capacity to do that. Hence, they can't allocate as much as they might like into an asset class which has superior ratings and superior yield and risk-adjusted returns to US treasuries. By creating new benchmarks, this allows core allocations to be made to this space, therefore presenting the possibility of a much larger allocation from mainstream investors.
Mark Haefeli, how will this help the World Bank, development banks? If we look across the whole picture, we've talked about what this means for UBS, but give us a sense of how developments here can help and facilitate to move the whole industry forward.
Well, I think there's two things. First, the World Bank and other development banks are excited about this because they've thought about institutional investors in the past, but have not really had the mechanisms for tapping into private clients. And getting new sources of capital is important as government funding has maybe not increased at the speed that they had hoped, and yet the number of important projects and sustainable projects out there is growing rapidly. And then a second area where I think all sides are very concerned is the tremendous desire for clients and others around the world to have sustainable investments means that you need a police force in the form of indexing or other subjects to prevent greenwashing, to prevent investments that maybe don't really meet the standards of sustainability that we want to promote being out there. I think this greater transparency and liquidity and meeting the standards of the benchmarks can really help prevent excesses or problems from developing as sustainable investing becomes mainstream.
Finally, on the program, UBS Chairman Axel Weber underscored his earlier point about what needs to happen and what he and UBS, indeed, are trying to facilitate here.
Sustainable investment needs to become an asset class. And when you look at some of the asset classes, they have a standardized documentation. It's all about standardizing and making it mainstream. And once that is done, even less sophisticated investors can invest in it because they're standardized products that are quality checked. So you need auditors to focus on sustainable investment. You need third-party assessments. You need the whole spectrum of financial instruments. And I think that is really not yet developed.
Simon Smiles, a last word to you. It really struck me listening to Axel Weber and certainly talking to Mark Haefeli earlier. And there was an almost tangible sort of sense of excitement from Mark about the potential here. But also married with that was this sense that this had maybe come about quicker and gone further even than he'd been hoping for. He seemed genuinely sort of surprised and delighted by the pace of change, the fact that you and your colleagues and others who you were working in partnership with have managed to facilitate such change so quickly. Have you been surprised? And what does that tell us? I mean, I guess there's some really positive takeaways from that.
Yeah, I concur. I guess I have to, given that Mark's my boss. But no, I really do concur. It has gone faster than we anticipated. I think there's a huge industry-wide drive towards looking at sustainable investing and incorporating sustainability. This is true on the institutional investment side. It's true when it comes to the private client base that we predominantly are working with. In part, it's regulatory. In part, it's investor demand. In part, it's corporate attitudes changing. So I think that's the macro. When it comes specifically to these benchmarks, though, the willingness and appetite of the World Bank to partner with us, first in terms of the pooled solutions we needed as a core component of our 100% sustainable investing cross-asset solution, but also more broadly index provider Selective and other asset management partners who are already looking at potentially developing asset management products on the back of these benchmarks. It has been very pleasing, but I'd agree surprising in terms of how much willingness, appetite, and how quickly this has developed. It's exciting.
And that's Simon Smiles bringing us to the end of this 185th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at the website or catch up via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.